here. Wouldn't that be a fun thing to wake up to every day? That'd be funny.
You probably could, you know, make that the alarm on your phone.
Yeah, the problem is, like, if it repeats, it kind of loses the point. But if it plays once, it's like, I'm going back to bed. The hell with it?
Maybe you can make that your alarm for, like, you know, like the 5th of every month.
Just once, yeah, so it doesn't get too old. Nah. The Exploding Barrel Podcast on this February 19th night of 2015. This is Mike Minotti. I'm joined by my brother Edge Guy.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's cold.
It is cold. It is cold. I hope everything's all right. Yeah. I think we should just say, I know our schedule's been a bit more regular this week. We've been doing a lot of bi-weekly weeks, but AJ's about to have a kid, so I can't imagine.
A kid?
Yeah, or twins.
Two kids.
So I can't imagine that's going to be a super irregular thing from now on.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're at our, what episode number is this?
300 something.
Yeah. So, you know, we have some rights. But yeah, you guys know how we kind of roll. It's always been a loose
schedule. We've been doing this show for 4.5 years with a very consistent listener base.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we know how it is. If we do a show, it'll pop up in your feed, and you'll go, oh, isn't that nice? And you'll listen to it, and it's about half an hour long, good for one road trip or a little workout session. So, hey, that's what we do here.
That's what it is all about.
Right. So, anyway, today we got some news to talk about, a lot of Peter Mullen news.
Hey! Oh, my God. How did we not come up with that one sooner?
Name the episode of that, Peter Mullen news.
Okay, just Mullen that's news. Easy. Writes itself.
I like episodes where, like, I say something like, that has to be the name of the episode.
Because usually I forget it's something else.
I don't know if anything makes one of my jokes less funny than I'm immediately like, that was so good. Name the episode after that. Patting myself.
You're expecting
on the back.
Maybe the Addams Family? Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll talk about that guy. And then plenty of games to talk about. A lot of Nintendo-y stuff, especially with the new 3DS. And some other things. We've got some releases to discuss and whatnot. But let's get going with the Mullen news, as it were.
Okay, so it all started
a long time ago when these two British people got together and decided to have
actually,
a child.
Actually, we will go back to the somewhat beginning of this in a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So Peter Molyneux is making Goddess, which he funded on Kickstarter.
Making slash made, I don't know anymore what the difference is
right,
early
so,
access games.
So first, like, the guy who is the now lead designer in the game, who was originally just a Kickstarter backer who was active in the forums and then got a job at 22 Cans.
Yeah, right.
Which is the company that Molly founded. Like, posted on some message board that, like, multiplayer is not happening. Right. Everyone was like, well,
he's like,
what,
well,
what,
he was like, it's
what the fuck?
His words were, I can't see it happening, were his words.
Yes. Well, you have to look harder because, you know, you're making the game.
Right.
So that happens. So then they like had a video where they were explaining it and they felt real bad. And then Rock Paper Shotgun did this interview on the phone with Peter Molyneux. If you haven't read it, you should read it. It's like watching a burning building. It's kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
But like it's kind of terrible at the same time. And the thing, like, I don't know what you thought. I thought the tone of the interview was, he was being a little too combative, I think. Like, Peter's pretty good at digging holes for himself. I don't think you need to give him a bigger shovel.
No, I'm gonna disagree. I honestly think Peter has been kind of coddled a bit too much. Peter, I mean, look, it's one thing if this is a new thing with Peter, right? The whole, oh man, Peter's not living up to expectations thing. But this is something he does all the time.
Every time.
Every
well,
time.
I think my thing was like he was being mean to Peter, but I still feel like he didn't ask questions that I felt like should have been asked, getting clear answers for them.
I don't know. Like I don't think we need to be nice to Peter Mullen anymore.
No,
it's not the first time Peter Mullen has done the whole "woe is me" thing.
Right.
The whole, I know, I just get too excited and I say these things, and you know, I think we almost like, oh, wasn't that cute? A little bit. Like, we almost, like, made that endearing somehow. Now with Kickstarter, that's not endearing.
Here's the thing, because yeah, he tries to explain this, and he's like, you know, when I say these things, I'm not making promises. I'm just talking like how great it would be if we could do this. And it's like, okay, you know what? When you're on the press tour for Fable and you're talking about planting an acorn and it grows to a tree, all right, cool, good for you. But when you're doing a Kickstarter pitch video, this is not the time to be like, it'd be neat if we could do this. I don't know. Like, no, you're supposed to, like, the assumption there is, oh, this is what he's saying they're going to do. And he's asked me for money so they can go do it. Do I want to give him money? So he goes and does that. And he didn't seem to see it that way, which blows my mind. Then he admits, yeah, like, we gamed Kickstarter because we knew we wouldn't fund it for the amount we actually needed. So we actually asked for less than we needed. And we would just worry about the rest of the money later if we got it. That part blew my mind.
Yeah, that's not good.
He's like, oh, that's just what everybody does. Like, no, fuck you. Then, so what? They're doing it wrong. Do it right.
Then another publication, I forget who knows, they tracked down the guy who won Curiosity, right? Because he's
So that was the other whole inciting incident here. He basically got the big old shaft.
Well, because the whole thing with Curiosity was promised that whoever would win it, their life would change.
Forever.
And it turned out that the thing was that they would become the God of Gods in Goddesses multiplayer mode. And during the period of time when they were God of Gods, they would get a proceeds of the profits from the game. Well, he can't be the God of Gods if there's no multiplayer mode. If there's no multiplayer mode, he can't be God of Gods and he can't make any money. So, like, that whole thing is just shit.
Now, I don't think they realize how lucky they are, relatively speaking, to that situation. Because the kid who won it is some British kid. He said in the interview with him, like, he's not even, like, that big a gamer. He don't even play Curiosity. He just kind of, like, right. Like, he didn't care. He just happened to win. He's like, oh, this is cool, I guess.
I mean, he seems disappointed.
Because don't forget, when Curiosity was a thing, it had in-app purchases to buy better pickaxes or whatever. Some of which cost, like, $50. I think you could get, like, one that was $1,000. Could you imagine the guy who spent hundreds of dollars buying in-app purchases of Curiosity? He's the one who wins it, and he's getting screwed? Because that's everyone's, like, a lot of people's attitude toward the whole Curiosity thing is, oh, like, whatever, like, it's unfortunate, but it doesn't really hurt this guy. What if it was someone who spent a lot of money playing this game, was promised this reward, and didn't get it?
It kind of hurts that. I mean, it's just weird. And it's weird because, like, I feel like there's no real legal course, is there? Because it's such a weird promise. Is it a promise? Like, oh, yeah, the winner's going to have their life changed. I don't know. But, man, this company. So right now, their two games have been, what, Curiosity and Goddess. I wonder how...
Meanwhile, he doesn't help himself by talking about the next game he's working on.
Well, that's
on.
What they're saying, yeah. It says most of the staff's working on the next game now.
It's like, then who the fuck's finishing Gods? Then, like, this is what I was talking about, like, him, like, not getting answers that I felt like he should have in the interview. He keeps asking, and Peter never gives him an answer, and he lets it go. But, like, he went on and on about how they wouldn't have a publisher for Goddess. But then they got a mobile publisher, and he's like, well, I only meant we wouldn't have a publisher on PC. Then later in the interview, he's like, well, the reason we don't have multiplayer is because the publisher changed the server structure. And then he's like, well, wait, I thought you said there wasn't a publisher for PC. And Peter's like, yeah, well, but they changed the server structure. And he's like, no, but that's not what I'm asking you. And then he just, like, let it go. And I'm like, no, like, make him answer that. It drives me. Because here's the thing. Like, I don't know what Peter Molyneux, the person's like. He might be a very nice, sweet guy. Peter Molyneux, the game designer, is a fucking dick. Plain and simple. He's a liar. Whatever he may think of himself. I don't think he means to lie. I don't think he realizes he's lying.
I don't think it comes from a malicious place. I think it comes from a very unwise.
But it's still lying.
Oh, it's still bad.
And it's still incredibly deceptive. And like I said, it was one thing when we're watching tech videos of this amazing looking combat system in Fable 2. And Fable 2, because I was like, okay, you know, pretty good combat system, but I wasn't like jumping from tables and swinging from chandeliers. That's one thing. But when it's a Kickstarter, and, you know, and that's the other thing. Well, it's Kickstarter. You know, it's just a donation. You're not really investing and you're really not owed anything. Yeah, but if you made a donation to Wounded Warriors and then you found out they used your money to buy a bunch of porn, wouldn't you be upset?
Well,
you're allowed to be pissed about that.
That is, I don't know if that's quite equal to the crime here.
No, but I'm just saying in concept. And it's like, and you're right though. Like, I don't know why the press gives this guy a pass. And like, it's funny that now finally come to a head.
Yeah.
Like, remember the whole thing with Fable? What was the Kinect one? Fable Legends.
The journey.
Yeah.
Not on rails. Remember?
Yeah. Like all these E3 stories that year were about how Peter Molyneux showed the game and then made every journalist promise that they agreed that the game wasn't on rails, and they had to like sign their name on the wall. And but like no article I read explained to me or gave Peter's explanation of why it wasn't on rails. And the game comes out and it's fucking on rails.
Right. And of course Peter Molyneux was gone from the company when it came out too. So he got to conveniently.
Yeah, like that forward. Never made any sense to me. Like, why did people let him get away with this bullshit?
And then there's the famous Molyneux cycle, at least with Fable, where he would always just talk about how shitty the last one was when he's talking about the next one.
Yeah.
Like you literally for each one.
So really like to the Kickstarter backers of Goddess who are upset, I just want to say, what the fuck did you expect?
Yeah, well, not a good idea to...
The guy with the reputation for over-exaggerating and lying about every game he's made since Black and White lied and over-exaggerated. What do you know? Yeah, like
that really is just a weird one to donate to. It's like...
You know,
it's
so like... Oh, go ahead.
It's like, sorry, no one donated Dennis Dyack, and maybe we should kind of put this guy on that level now. You know?
Well, and everyone's like, oh, but he made Populous. It was so good. Populous was like 30 years ago. Gives a fuck?
I like some... Populous is one of those things that I don't know anything about. It's one of my gaming blind spots. All these
Dungeon
early...
Keeper, I played it as a kid. It was fun. I don't think it was like life-changing.
Right.
So I don't know if you read this. I forget where it was. Basically the reason Peter Molyneux got into gaming. Are you ready for this? Because this cracks me up. And this is what makes me think, yes, this man is a dick. So he tried to design a game on something like a Commodore 64 or something back in the 80s. Tried to sell it. No one would buy it. So he gets out of the gaming business. He starts like exporting something or other. He has like this computer company he builds. Well, he gets a phone call from Amiga. They've confused his company with another company with a very similar name that was a computer company. And they wanted him to fly to the States and look at their new product. And so he just kind of goes with it. He goes to this meeting. And then they're like, yeah, we'd really love for you to have these 10 Amigas for you to develop on. And you think at this point, be like, okay, well, I'm not who you thought. No, he takes the fucking computers and starts making games.
Well,
his entire career in the industry is founded on a massive lie. That's all I'm saying.
Some people would say he took advantage of a good opportunity.
By fucking lying!
Yeah, you know. Do you believe him when he says he's done talking to the press?
No, he said this that guy, in three interviews.
That guy loves talking to the press. He loves... I cannot see him not going to these trade shows or whatever and not chatting it up constantly. Talking with Adam Sessler. Wasn't he giving commentary on G4 at one point, like during the press conference?
Yeah, that's right. It was like after he left Lionhead, but before the whole 22 cans Goddess thing started.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. This guy's going to keep quiet. I don't know what the future of this company is, because I can't imagine this press has been particularly good for Goddess.
No, nor like this next game they're doing. Like, of course, now he won't talk about it, so we don't know what it is. Like, who's going to even care? I think this is the problem, because, like, I think Fable was okay. Fable 2 is pretty good. Fable 3, I haven't played it, but I heard it had a lot of problems.
Awful.
I think Peter Molyneux is this guy who goes out with all these grandiose ideas, and behind him in the past have been a team of AAA developers who are like, all right, let's take what we can of this, we'll make it work, so it's not shit. He doesn't have that anymore. He's got 20 guys that he's paying out of pocket, and they're like, whatever you say, Peter, we're here because, you know, I'm the lead designer of your game. I was a backer of it when it was on Kickstarter. Whatever you say, Peter. Like, he's become George Lucas in that he doesn't have people around him to say no. But he doesn't have George Lucas's resources.
Have you played Goddess? I'm, like, almost curious now how it is.
It's on my phone. I've never fired it up. Apparently, that's the thing, too. The mobile version, at least, is apparently just, like, a free-to-play nightmare, like every other city-building game on iOS. Yeah, and, you know, the early... I love it. It's like, we've made 200 updates to the early access. Like, so, like, if you add a line of code, that's not an update. Like, no one gives a shit. They want the game that was supposed to be out a year ago.
I never want to play an early access game ever.
No, I really don't get the appeal of that at all.
It's one thing when a game's episodic, right?
And episodic or...
I'm not getting it all at once. That's one thing. I'm not even a huge fan of that. The, you know, at least the parts I'm getting are done.
Well, I could kind of see it for a little bit. I mean, a little bit. I've never even done this myself. I could kind of understand it for something that's multiplayer focused. And I could even kind of understand it for something that's kind of Minecrafty. But like, when you see like a single player story based game that's in early access, like, no. Why would I do that?
I don't know. The whole thing's just kind of a mess.
And it, you know, again, in the interview, like, the guy's like, why is this game taking so long? He's like, oh, I didn't know it would take this long. And the guy's like, you've been making games for a long time. And he's like, oh, every game I made is late. Well, then why didn't you just tell people, like, this game will be ready in 3 years? And I know why, because he knew then he wouldn't get backed.
Right. Oh,
God. Which, again, he's a liar.
Man, when is Broken Age Part 2 coming out? I feel like that first one was a long time ago.
It was. It is soon. I think I actually got a backer update. I think they're in like closed beta right now with it. Like everything's pretty much done.
It's gonna be kind of weird if there's like a lot of callbacks to the first part that I don't.
Yeah, I almost feel like I need to replay it.
Yeah, I don't. Broken Age is kind of weird.
I liked it. I think it's very good.
I liked it too. But yeah. It's weird because I don't think it's going to escape the legacy of being the Kickstarter game. Like, I think that's going to be the most notable thing about it.
Yeah, like, I wonder how many people still call it Double Fine Adventure instead of Broken Age.
It's not going to be like the next Grim Fandango or even Full Throttle or even Psychonauts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good game. So.
Yes. So that's my Peter Molyneux rant.
All right, what else we got? Man, we were on Peter Molyneux for 17 minutes? Jeez.
Yeah, see?
All right.
It's good for something. Airtime, baby. I was going to say, we forgot to talk about this for the show, but the preview update for the Xbox One came out. Screenshots!
Yeah, well, finally.
Yes.
Well, that second topic took a lot less time. Moving on!
There, just evening out. I'm also vamping. What was the third thing we were going to talk about?
I don't know. Probably wasn't very important.
It was about a game.
What?! Oh, you want to talk about The World Ends With You not working, is what you want
no,
to say.
No, you dismissed that. It was something else you brought. You brought it up. It was your idea.
Oh, that was my idea. Well, I don't know. It probably wasn't important.
I guess not.
You see, Bath Blasters back on Facebook? I wrote about that today. I don't think that's what you're talking about.
No.
Oh, you wanted to talk about The Order. 1886. It's the reception of it, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, what do you make of that whole fiasco?
My big takeaway from it, it's not really about the game itself, because I haven't played the game. I don't really know if it's all that good or not. It's just, I find it very interesting how Sony and Microsoft seem to really be struggling creating new franchises this console generation.
Because
This was about the time, like about 1 year in, at least it wasn't the case last time, it's kind of when Microsoft had got Gears of War and Sony got Uncharted. And, you know, they both had their false starts with, you know, like a Cameo or a... Heavenly Sword or a Lair, but yeah, just it seems like, you know, it's that same thing. It's like we have like Knack, and that's not gonna go anywhere. Or Rise, that's not gonna go anywhere. And now, it kind of, you know, maybe I don't know. Maybe this game's gonna sell well anyways. But the reception seems icy.
Yeah, it's disappointing because Ready at Dawn was a studio I had a lot of high hopes for their kind of first real game. Like they did the PSP God of War games, which were my favorite God of War games. They've done some other ports and stuff. So, like, I thought they'd really pull something off, but from reading the reviews, it sounds like the game just doesn't do anything all that interesting.
Well, I think it's just an issue of them playing it incredibly safe.
Yeah, which...
Which is not, you shouldn't not, do not with a good
new IP.
To do
new IP needs to stand out somehow, right? You know? It really does.
And I know some people will be like, well, why is it not okay? There's so many games are shooters. It's not okay for this game to be a shooter. Well, it's one thing when, you know, the fourth Uncharted game is like another shooter or the fourth Far Cry, whatever. The fact that we don't have that many new franchises coming from, like, the main studios for it to just literally be another cover-based shooter.
Yeah,
it was with no
with
real,
a lot of QTEs apparently.
Not, yeah, I mean, like the setting itself sounds interesting and it kind of looks good, but yeah, it sounds like it is very much just a shooting gallery.
Now, what was your take when everyone was upset about the supposed 5-hour playtime that leaked?
Ah, that meant nothing to me. Who cares?
Yeah, it didn't, like, that seems like about I don't mind so much myself either, but there was one point, like I kind of wanted to make, because, you know, a lot of people on Twitter were like, oh, like, don't judge a game on its time. It doesn't matter. I'm like, yeah, I agree. But I think, honestly, the people to blame for this are the publishers. Because how many times do you see it when it's like, this game has over 100 hours of gameplay? It's so big. Right. Look how incredible.
Yeah, they're the first ones that tout it when it is a long time.
So I think in a way, whether they realize it or not, they're the ones who've conditioned the majority of gamers, the mainstream, to be like, oh, well, longer games are better. Because it says so on the back of this box. So when you do release a 5-hour game, you're kind of, you know, it's smaller than the last one. Like, does that make sense?
I kind of.
I mean, it doesn't apply to me and you and most of our listeners, I imagine. I'm just saying, in the general terms, I think this is the condition they've created. It's that same argument where a lot of people are like, what if it came out and it was like...
I mean, you can say it, but it is also kind of a common sense thing. If people are going to be like, well, this game is 100 hours long and it costs $60, and this game is 5 hours long and it costs $60, that's not right. And of course, you know, there's a lot of arguments against it where they're different kind of experiences, blah, blah,
right.
blah.
Well, I don't know if
I would want to play more than 5 or 6 hours of a game like The Order.
No.
Even if it was good.
But there's that argument, too, of like, well, why didn't it cost $40 then? And the counter that's always, well, people perceive a $40 game like there's something wrong with it. Like, why doesn't it cost $60? It's kind of the same thing.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you what, another game I just beat that was probably about 4 or 5 hours long. Was Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, which I'll talk about a little bit, and, you know, that actually does cost $40.
Oh, is that all it is?
Yeah.
Good
Nintendo is, like, the only one that is actually good about that. They will charge $40 or $50 for their game.
Yeah, was Captain Toad $40?
$40 or $50. It was not full price.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. They'll do that. I mean, The Order, I bet from a production point of view, The Order costs much more to make than a Captain Toad.
Oh, sure.
So I'll let that slide. Like, I get it. You know, and that's what they are selling it on the cinematic aspect a lot. So, you know, you can say that's what you're paying for. And supposedly it does, at least some reviews do say that it does look really good.
Oh, sure.
But, you know, you'll get that as promised.
Although, you see the whole thing with, like, the aspect ratio in the game.
Yeah. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's like, it's the cinematic. No, you just couldn't get the frame rate to stay steady at full resolution. Yeah, where's all the 1080p naysayers now?
What new IPs have really had a decent start? The only I can think of immediately is Sunset Overdrive. It's not like that. I mean, that was good. I don't know if it blew people's minds away. But it was like an 80 plus something on Metacritic, at least.
Yeah, there's that.
It was exclusive, but...
what else new IP-wise has come out? Destiny? The hell?
Destiny Titanfall, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, Titanfall. Like, that's the thing. It still cracks when people are like, oh, there's nothing to play on these consoles. Fuck you.
There's plenty
to play on these consoles.
Right.
I have as much to play now as I ever have. Everyone needs to chill.
All right. Speaking
of consoles and stuff to play on them.
Let's talk about that Nintendo 3DS, the new Nintendo 3DS.
Which is still not confusing at all.
No, but, man, I do really like this. As far as the...
It is great.
As far as, like, all those upgrades go, this is probably, like, the best upgrade we've had since the Game Boy Advance to the Game Boy Advance SP.
It's so funny, too, because I don't know if you've noticed this. Like, every overview of the system I've read online has been, like, if you have an XL already, you probably shouldn't upgrade. It's probably not worth it.
Man, I don't know.
Man, the first time you use that super stable 3D, this is one of those cases where technology feels like magic.
Yeah.
It works so well.
It is almost like seeing that glassless 3D kind of working again for the first time, but like before there was that caveat and now it's just like working.
Just works.
And it works really well. And we were always kind of defenders of 3D. A lot of people don't like the 3D.
Mm-hmm.
But my big complaint about it was that, like, you know, especially games like Star Fox and Zelda, they would have these gyroscope controls, and as soon as you start using that, then the 3D effect goes away. Or if you're just, like, playing in bed, so it's just kind of hard to find the sweet spot. But this thing, and even, like, the pure dark at night when I'm playing it in bed, lying on my side.
Yeah, because it uses the infrared.
Right. I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Because, yeah, like, I mean, I threw in Star Fox. I played it, you know, with full gyro control in 3D. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah, so, like, I think that's definitely the biggest selling point to me.
And, of course, in my situation, I took advantage of GameStop's trade-in thing. So, got a $100 credit, so I paid $100 to upgrade, which was totally worth it.
I did too, yeah, so whatever. I got to get one of the Majora's Mask ones. How about that?
Yeah. Were you able to do the trade-in and all that nonsense?
Yeah, I just had to. It was crazy. It's so weird how you do it. Because, you know, I first off, they shipped the game to me because, like, they only had so many of those Zelda ones left. Then I gave them my receipt and the old thing. So basically, they did it like a refund first and then resold it for me. After they did the trade-in towards it. It was bizarre.
Yeah.
But, yeah. The extra buttons are nice. As two shoulder buttons are, they're pretty well placed. The analog nub, it's good to have there. It's better than not having there. You do kind of just wish it was like the other one.
Try just a little harder maybe on that thing.
Especially for camera controls, it works. And even in Smash Bros., you're using it as like
the your Smash stick.
It works fine.
It does, but I just feel like sometimes I feel like I'm pushing it as far as it'll go. Like I'm playing Majora's Mask. And the camera's like barely moving. I'm like, I am pushing. Yeah, like, I can't
sometimes.
Push this any harder.
Little bits.
And sometimes. It's hard. Like I'm always going a little up or a little down. Like again, it's serviceable. I think is the best thing you can say about it. But it should have just been another.
Well, that's the thing, right? There's always one thing with these Nintendo portables.
But it's just
right?
So you know, it's Nintendo. They still fucked it up a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. So like there can you know someday, Jordy.
Do you notice much of an improvement in, like, loading times and things
really.
Like that?
Not really. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I did. I'm sure if you put it next to another one, it would be fine. But I think it's a great upgrade. And playing Majora's Mask, I think we're both around the same point. We both beat the first dungeon.
Yeah. Oh, man. Like, it's fantastic for me because we never owned this game, did we?
We never, no, we rented it.
I think we rented it and then decided we didn't like it.
And then, I think I started like the first 30 minutes of this game a couple times. Once we rented it and again on that GameCube collection that happened. And yeah,
so
I never
this is essentially, it's essentially a brand new 3D Zelda to
really
me, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, it's kind of cool to play it now. Especially,
and I feel like someone could correct me on this. I don't remember there being things like being able to play the Song of Time backwards to slow time in the game.
I don't know specifically. I know they added
the fast travel.
Like that. I know they added things like that.
I don't know if that's added and that's what's making it better for me right now or what, but I'm having a blast.
Yeah, I can manage it because of that stuff. And also like, you know, just now that I know just from like people writing articles and whatnot about like, not to stress myself out about the time limit, about how, you know, how to handle it. Cause I would get stressed out about that first time I get without it really being explained to me. I would be like, I don't understand what I'm supposed to do. Everything I just did got undone. This is stupid. Now I kind of get it more.
Right. And plus, again, having that touchscreen inventory, much like Ocarina of Time 3D, like, I feel like switching masks would be really tedious without that.
Yeah. With that.
So it's nice to have that.
Yeah. So it's a good game to launch the new 3DS with.
Now, I did play the demo of Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate, and same thing. First of all, having that circle pad to control the camera a bit is super nice.
Cool.
I find, like, I still use the L trigger in both games, really. If I need to quickly turn, I still tap it just to center the camera behind.
Well, I mean,
but if I'm just, like, if I'm just following, like, a monster moving across the screen, then, I'll use that little nub. But just Monster Hunter on its own, yeah, I played a good deal of 3 Ultimate and kind of got finally into the series for the first time with that one. So the demo, it's like it's similar to the 3 Ultimate demo. It just throws you into a hunt. You can pick any of the weapons and, it gives you like some like kind of intermediate gear and lets you go at it. And I tried the new weapon, which is the insect glaive.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the two new ones. So the way it works is it's kind of like a lance. In its most basic sense. But then you can also shoot out this insect. And then depending where it latches onto an enemy monster, you get juice out of the monster, which you then recall the insect. And there's 3 different buffs and you can combine the buffs for some different effects. And then the weapon's also unique because there's like a lot of verticality in Monster Hunter 4. And this one lets you kind of vault off the lance and jump. And if you could land and do a flying attack on a monster, you have a chance to get on its back and you can start stabbing it and holding on to it. It's kind of strangely reminiscent of Shadow of the Colossus in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also, if you don't have that weapon, if you like climb a wall and leap off it, you could get onto the monster, which I feel like would be really hard, but you can do it. But man, it looks pretty. It looks really pretty.
That's something I want to try out, I think, once I get through Majora's Mask.
Yeah, so, I think I might dive into after I finish Majora's, because I finally was enjoying the Monster Hunter games once I kind of figured it out a little more than I ever had. And they've improved and streamlined the series in some ways. You know, you still flex when you drink a potion, which I think is dumb, but
whatever.
It's not the end of the world. But I also played the demo for Codename Steam.
I mean, this is the Fire Emblem guys, which
it's gonna be so good.
Everyone knows how much I love Fire Emblem Awakening, so I'm
it's gonna be so good.
Yeah,
it's like this amazing blend of XCOM, Valkyria Chronicles, and Fire Emblem.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Setting is cool too.
Mm-hmm. Everything about it just oozes style. It's just really neat. It's so fun. You're over the shoulder kind of third person. It does work with the analog nub on the new 3DS, but you can just use the face buttons to control the camera too, because they don't do anything else.
Uh-huh.
But you can just see a grid before you of how much, like, where you can move based on how much steam you have available. Steam is your movement, your attacks. But you can, if you backtrack, you get that steam back. And you can kind of manipulate that a little bit, because there's coins in the map that you can grab. You can actually run out, grab some coins, and run back. As long as you don't get, like, hit by an Overwatch attack, you won't lose that steam. So I guess that's like the risk reward there. You might run into something.
Do you know how the game's handling character death?
I do not. I haven't died yet. But the way they handle checkpoint in the game is pretty brilliant. So there's these consoles throughout the level that if you run out to them, they give you some advice and they refill your steam. But then there's also save points, basically. When you run up to a save point, you save your progress, like just straight up save. And then you can either pay a small amount of coins to heal that character, or you pay like 10 times the amount, so like either 20 or 200, and that heals everybody.
Oh.
But you can only use this checkpoint one time. So it makes coins a very valuable commodity, because they're basically your heal later tool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you, if you're screwed, well, I need to get to a checkpoint and heal everybody. Like, it's a super smart mechanic. Really cool. So yeah, I am very excited for that to come out next month.
Well, like I said, I actually reviewed Kirby and Rainbow Curse, which comes out on Friday. I played it with you a little bit. You're trying out the multiplayer. Yeah, it's super cool. It's very much like what Canvas Curse was, with the whole touchscreen controls and whatnot. The big difference is the art style, which looks great. Everything looks like it's made out of clay.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like how, you know, Epic Yarn was yarn, this is clay. It's cool because, like, when I was a kid, I would make Kirby's out of clay. I would go to Pakistan.
That's right, you did.
Yeah, and it looked to me, you know, because Kirby's not very hard to make.
Yeah,
it
right.
Exactly like that. So it's kind of neat. It has like a multiplayer mode. It's kind of an asynchronous sort of thing where, you know, the one person's Kirby on the gamepad and then the other people are Waddle Dees, and they're kind of playing it more like a traditional platformer where they're just moving around with a D-pad or whatever, and they have like a spear attack. But they can also glide along any of the paths that you make for Kirby and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's more like Sonic and Tails kind of thing than like a, you know, Mario Brothers.
Yeah, yeah, it was definitely, yeah, like more Tails. The thing that's just goofy to me about this game is, like, you don't need a TV.
Well,
you know, you're just playing on the gamepad.
Well, that's kind of the problem, right? Is that at least this game uses the gamepad, which is a first for a while for a Nintendo game on the Wii U. But yeah, now it's not quite using the TV. It's weird how, it's like they didn't think that whole concept through, because now they really don't know what to do with it.
But, like, I guess what bummed me out is, like, you talk about the visuals, which are gorgeous, and what makes them look so good is, like, the detail and, like, the molding of the clay isn't quite perfect.
Well, I mean, that's easier to see on the TV, yeah.
Right, you just lose that when you're staring at the gamepad screen.
The music's also fantastic. Yeah, it's just a very pretty game. There's a couple things missing from Canvas Curse that I actually kind of miss.
Such as?
Well, Canvas Curse had copy abilities still.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there's just none of that in here.
Yeah.
And there's some
transformation levels that were kind of fun. But.
Yeah, like almost like in Epic Yarn where you turn into like a Kirby tank and stuff like that. And it's neat, and it spices up the gameplay a little bit. The other thing was, you know, in Canvas Curse, there's a lot more manipulating the environment with the touchscreen. Like, you would be hitting switches. You can tap on an enemy to stun them for a bit. Then you touch them to kill them, stuff like that. In this one, you're pretty much only manipulating Kirby. You're not really solving puzzles quite that way. Which, you know, maybe it's not bad or worse. It's just a little different.
Different.
Yeah. But, I mean, overall, I really enjoy playing it. I always like these Kirby games. I really liked Triple Deluxe. I feel like that was one of the more underrated games last year.
It's interesting how they're like Kirby's like kind of their playground for experimenting with art.
Yeah, he always is. Or weird ideas in general. Don't forget there was like that weird Kirby golf game. Remember
that? That was a great game. Kirby Dream Course. Yeah.
Kirby Dream Course, and, yeah. They're always doing weird stuff with them. Back before, it was kind of a thing where, like, you'd have these weird pinball spin-offs of games. There was Kirby Pinball before all of that. That game was great.
Yeah, that was good, too. That was a great game.
Kirby Pinball. Yep. I also started Far Cry 4.
How's that?
It's great. I mean, it's very Far Cry 3-ish.
Yeah, I heard. Like that's like the one, I guess, knock against it, that it's like it is kind of really similar to 3.
I mean,
I didn't really play 3, so that's cool.
It is, but I think, I like the story and kind of the, I like a lot of the details better. I kind of like the setting better. It's obviously, you know, it's prettier running on the new systems. It looks really good, but yeah, the setup is very much the same kind of thing. Yeah.
Is it weird that the main character's name is AJ?
Yeah, it makes me laugh. Well, it's funny because like the whole thing is that he pronounced it AJ as like an Americanized version of Ajay, which is his real Ajay Gali, and he said, you know, he calls himself AJ Gale. So half the people call him AJ. I'm like, huh, Aj guy, the hero. But I mean, you
know, because it's AJ Gale too. So there's the G.
But at least it is a good formula that they had going there. It's fun to take out those outposts and, you know.
Do you think they can do that for a fifth one, or do they need to change it up more dramatically? No,
they're
going to
do something a little differently, I think. They can't just Assassin's Creed it. They've got the Assassin's Creed 4 it next. What was I going to say? Yeah, one thing I like about, you know, it has like that kind of, it's sort of like an Himalayan Indian sort of a setting. It is almost like I'm on like a little vacation when I'm playing this game.
It's like you're going to Animal Kingdom and riding Expedition Everest.
It very much reminds me of like that Expedition Everest area of Animal Kingdom, because there's those prayer flags everywhere and stuff like that.
Right.
It looks nice. And yeah, it's like, oh, I'm not used to this architect. You know, I guess what I'm saying is like, hey, look, it's not sci-fi or like medieval fantasy.
Or like the zombie apocalypse in New York.
It kind of looks different than a lot of games I play. It's kind of nice in that way. It's sad that you like really realize that, but yeah. But yeah, I've been enjoying that. I've been playing quite a bit. You know, more Warcraft as always. I switched up my spec from Frost to Unholy. I gotta get those sweet AoE deeps, you know what I mean?
Indeed.
Yeah. All right, that does it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty good. All right.
Yeah, not bad.
Long as that. All right, so releases. Dead or Alive 5 last round for Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and also PlayStation
3. Who cares about Dead or Alive
anymore? People must, because they keep making these things.
Yeah, but like, I never got into it. I would never, like, a Street Fighter tournament, very legit. A Smash Bros. Tournament, entertaining. Dead or Alive tournament, like,
I guess there's
boobs. Like, I don't know. I don't think of that as, like, some top-tier fighting franchise anymore. And I think the only reason it ever was is because it had boobs.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, there's not a lot of the 3D fighting game franchises I really care about. The only one is Soul Calibur. Even that one I'm kind of been getting
burnt out on, yeah.
So,
well, you know, when they turn into a free-to-play game, you're like, eh.
Yeah. So, honestly, the 3D fighters in general aren't really my thing. Total War Attila for a PC. You ever play these? It's never really
not, my thing. Not in a long time. Not since, like, the original Shogun. They're fun, but they're complicated.
Hey, you ever hear this game called Hand of Fate? Came out for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. I actually have a copy of this. I'm going to start this soon. It's some sort of, like, deck-building game.
Huh.
Some sort that looks, apparently some people are buzzing about it.
I like building decks.
Yeah, deck building is fun and all that, so I want to try that. On Friday, you have the Order 1886, which you talked about, Kirby and the Rainbow Curse. Now, Order 1886, everyone's kind of like agreeing-ish on, it's like in the 6-ish range. Kirby and the Rainbow Curse reviews are super weird, because there's like a lot of people giving it 9s, then you have like GameSpot giving it a 5.
Oh my.
People just can't agree.
What was their beef?
I have no idea. I'm not sure. I think some people just, I think it seems like people don't like it, just fundamentally do not like the control system, which I like it. I liked it in Game of Skirts, I like it there. All right, yeah, and that's basically it. It's weird that Evolve happened, and I thought that was going to be a very big deal.
You know what I think, honestly, kind of screwed them? I think all these betas and alphas they did.
I felt like I played the game.
Yeah, like, I was like, because, I mean, it's certainly an interesting concept, but it's a little bit of a one-trick pony. Like, it kind of played it. That was cool. I think they would have done better to almost follow more of a MOBA route, even make it free-to-play like a MOBA.
Maybe.
I feel like they would have found a little more of an audience that way, because you would have been able to get people in the door. Because that's the problem with that game. Every review and everything you hear is, oh, you play with friend, it's great, but you know, you gotta get 4 people. five, right, ideally.
And that's kind of my thing, was like, we have like our group of five people, but
no one bought it.
They all started losing interest, and I almost couldn't blame them towards the end. But yeah, you know, it's funny because that game blew me away at E3.
Oh yeah, it won so many E3 Game of Show awards.
But again, it's a game that leaves a really great impression that first time you play it. But then you are kind of like, well, all right. I don't know why, for some reason, I could play, you know, Summoner's Rift or whatever over and over again.
Yeah, exactly. Ports.
I don't know why that isn't translating to this for me, but it just isn't. I think it's because that initial phase of like trying to find the hunter the first time is almost kind of frustrating.
Do you mean?
I don't know. It's just because, especially when like I have that, you're just following that dog creature. And there probably is a more sophisticated way to do it, but I feel like I'm just following that dog, and I know the monster's just always one step ahead of us. It just seems like to take a while before I can even find the stupid thing.
Well, and unfortunately too, it's a game where the competency of the person playing the monster is directly proportional to how fun the game is. Because, you know, I guess it's more of a bell curve. If they suck at it, it's boring because you just kill them right away. But if they're too good, then there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. All right, I guess that'll do it then. All right, everyone, thanks for listening to the Explain Barrel podcast. You can find more of us on ebpodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Be sure to go to iTunes Music Store. You can leave us a review there. We always appreciate that. And I guess we'll see you next week right here on the Splitting Barrel podcast. Happy early birthday, Ash Guy.
Hey, thank you. Bye-bye.